Driving season is in full swing, and an unexpected car repair can cost hundreds, even thousands to fix, ruining your road trip. That's why I recommend getting extended coverage from CarShield. A new water pump could set you back over $500. Replacing your AC can cost as much as $1,500. With CarShield, the dealership or your favorite mechanic can do the work. CarShield does the rest, getting them paid directly. Save yourself from high repair bills with CarShield. Call 800-CAR-6100, mention code Benson, or visit CarShield.com. Use code Benson to save 10%. CarShield.com, a deductible may apply.
Independent in thoughts and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
It's been a headache for everybody. It's been a nightmare for many. And we are looking at a health care that would be a fantastic tribute to our country.
Sorry, Mr. President. We're going to pay tribute to the health care bill. Pay tribute. We've put it here. I want all of you to pay tribute. You know, that's what they used to do in the old days, right? So, like, these heads of states, right, they would go. Yeah. They go and win a battle, and the warriors would win the battle, but you would go pay tribute to the head. So you'd go and bring them, you know, all of this stuff. Today in battle, we took this, this, and this. I pay tribute to you. And that's what's going to happen. Apparently, Trump is holding a re-election fundraiser. We were trying to figure it out. Now, Producer Phil, you said you saw the story the other day. Is this for his re-election, or is this just for campaign money for other people and their re-election?
I believe it's for his re-election.
I'm curious. Wow, that's crazy. That's what it is, right? That's why I'm telling you. President, we changed the terms. You get 1 6-year term. You get 1 6-year term so you can think about getting a job done without having to be reelected. It gives you enough time to get in there, get your feet settled, have a couple years to really get that meat of it before you become the lame duck over the last year, year and a half, and we get on with our lives so we can start looking forward. I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe we should take some of my ideas because they're pretty awesome. All right? I'm rad. I think we should all realize that. Quicker we do, the better it is for everybody else. Okay? That's so funny. We should pay tribute. Quick, people, come to Obamacare. We've killed it. Now let's pay tribute to the new super care. This one is super extra good care. Come pay tribute. Drop upon thine tribute. So insane. So insane. If you don't think this is insane, people, I'm telling you this now. Wait until they're running all of your health care. Wait until that happens. CNN's got not a lot going on because all they care about is the singular destroying of President Trump. That's the gig they have. They've taken it amongst themselves to destroy President Trump. So good luck to you. But they did have Elmo on the other day, and I thought it was hilarious because they've... This whole travel ban thing's going on in this PC world that we live in. You got to have the, you know, you've got to do PC stuff for everything. It's like yesterday, I got a lot of text messages from people. And a lot of it I was surprised about that, and emails saying, "You know what? I'm glad you said that about the whole Serena Williams and John McEnroe and the tennis thing, and you know, thanks for saying that because you know, God, we shouldn't say stuff like that." I'm like, "Why? Why shouldn't you say something that's honest?" Right? But now in this PC world, we got to say PC stuff. And it's the travel ban is one of those things where, okay, we're going to bring Elmo in to talk about the travel ban and to talk about, you know, foreigners and to talk about all these things and refugees because that's politically correct.
Elmo, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Elmo, thank you for having me, Elmo. Hi, everybody.
Elmo, can I just start by asking you, because I know you went to visit a refugee camp in Jordan, right?
Yes.
Back in February?
Yes.
What was it like?
It was really wonderful.
Friends, and did you find that the Syrian little girls and little boys were a lot like your friends here in America?
Yeah, they really were. It was very interesting because they like to play and learn,
right?
Just like Elmo and all of his friends at Sesame Street.
It was wonderful, Elmo?
Yeah, it was.
No, no, it's not. It's not wonderful. It's not. How is that wonderful? First of all, think about this, right? Here's the hubris of us and just the You're sitting there, right? Your mother and father, you don't know where they are. Your brother's been blown to bits. You're in a camp with your third cousin removed twice. And around the corner comes PBS and Sesame Street with a red freaking puppet because they want to use your story of your life to make themselves feel better, right? How's that make you feel?
Hey, I'm sorry you were blown up and it really sucks. Would you like to come to America?
You know there's a global refugee and displacement crisis. 25 million refugees, 40 million more people inside their own countries displaced by war and persecution. And half of that total is children. And I think that Sesame's inspiration of bringing to poor kids in America the assumptions of middle-class kids was something that we wanted to take globally. Let's take the assumptions of the global middle class and take them to some of the most vulnerable kids in the world.
Just what they need. Hey, you know what, guys? Thanks for doing us a solid. You're right. We don't need food and we don't need protection. Thanks for bringing us a red puppet. That solves everything here. I wonder if ISIS is terrified. You better watch out.
Here comes Elmo.
It's the insanity of it all. Political correctness, kids. Political correctness. Really. And the funny thing is poor Elmo's got to buy into all this crap, right? You got to buy into all this stuff if you're Elmo. It's insane.
We know from so much experience in the region and around the world that if we can reach children early, they have the greatest chance to overcome these challenges, to flourish. And that's what Sesame does so well.
Yeah, yeah. If we get to them early enough, they're not going to be killers, huh? Whoa. You think they're ISIS puppets? You think so? You think ISIS has their own puppets? Oh, come on. That's not very nice, Chad. Well, we know the Palestinians do, right? Where they've got that fake Mickey Mouse that's teaching kids how to blow themselves up. Chad, stop that. It's rude. But this is the insanity of what goes on. This is the insanity. Let's export Elmo to Syrian refugee camps to talk to little boys and girls. Now, first of all, if I'm going to send any of the Sesame Street, you know who I'm sending? Right? I'm sending Big Bird. Because Big Bird is really world famous. Elmo's famous, kind of, but I think it's more of a, it's kind of more of a middle classy kind of thing. I would send Big Bird. Big Bird's been around a while. You could send, Oscar the Grouch. He's Sesame Street, right? He's an SOB, but he's going to give you the truth, right? Mr. Snuffleupagus, right? Like, that'd be cool. But Elmo, really?
Elmo, let me ask you, was it sad for you to meet little boys and girls who had lost their homes?
Yeah, it was really sad because Elmo's new friends in Jordan told Elmo that they had to leave their homes because it wasn't safe for them to stay. And that made Elmo really sad, and sometimes I'm a little bit scared.
I'm sure. And why do you think, Elmo, that it's important to help other children?
Well, Elmo just thinks it's really important to be kind to people.
Yeah, but then later on down the road, I was talking to the people, and they said that I was an infidel son of a biscuit, and they were going to cut my head off because I'm the worst person ever, and that scared Elmo, too. And I told the camera crew, it's enough of this, and they started screaming, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, and they wanted to blow us up, and I don't think that's really cool at all. I think that was kind of a Richard move, you know what I mean? Quite frankly, I don't give a rat's ass. Trump's right.
It's always nice that I can reduce things like that down to the worst possible thing ever. Elmo, you're horrible.
I'm just being honest. The media's not honest. I'm honest. Yeah, those little kids are crazy. I'll tell you that. Nuts.
Chad, you're the worst. That's what they do, kids. All about political correctness, right? Everybody feel better now? That's what they're doing. And could you imagine being that lady who gets to interview Elmo? Right? That's got to be great. So the guy's off. What's his name? Kevin? I don't know. He was in trouble, too. I'm surprised. There's a guy who survived stuff. Elmo survived stuff. The dude who played Elmo survived. Remember all that stuff he got in trouble with?
Yeah, I remember that. Underage sex and stuff like that. Yep, allegedly.
You're the worst, Chad. You're the worst.
I'll act more, kiss my butt.
Hey, if you're hiring, hiring right now, look at that. That's a segue, people. That's a segue. If you're hiring right now, you know what you need? You need the right company to put you with the right employee for the right job. Nobody does it better than ZipRecruiter. You can post your job to 100-plus sites. Boom, like that, single click. Powerful technology, unlike any other technology in the industry. Let me tell you what they do. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in less than 24 hours. That is incredible. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place. You see, ZipRecruiter's got this easy-to-use dashboard, and it is easy to use. Find out why ZipRecruiter's been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And that's what you want, because time is money, and you don't got a lot of time because you want to make a lot of money. That's why you need to use ZipRecruiter today. Chad Benson Show listeners, that's all of you out there. Post your job for free today. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/report. That's ZipRecruiter.com/report. One more time. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/report. Post your job for free today. What's next is next. Chad Benson Show.
It's not that he's particularly intuitive or even psychic. He's just weird this way. It's What's Next with Chad Benson.
Bitcoins. You don't even know what they are. It's neat. It's a currency of sort on the interwebs here, on the www. Many people are saying, look, this is the new gold rush. Bitcoin is poised for a breakout. It's actually trading at about $2,600 per coin. It's how people exchange money. It's amazing what's happened. If you would have spent, this is what's insane. If you would have bought Bitcoin, spent $5 on Bitcoin 7 years ago, you'd have about $4.4 million today value. If you'd have spent $1,200, you'd be worth $1.1 billion. That's 880,000% return on your investment. That's pretty good. I just like to point that out. What is a Bitcoin?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Did you say Bitcoin bubble?
I sure
did. You said the B word.
This thing is trading above, what, 2,200 last time we looked? That's ridiculous.
It's on a run. It's on a run. You know what this reflects? It's becoming mainstream.
There's nothing mainstream about this thing. I can't go out to the hot dog vendor and use Bitcoin. And besides, how can you possibly tell me that this isn't a bubble? I mean, the thing has spiked so high it looks like a climbing wall. No, Bitcoin, it bubble.
No bubble. What it is essentially, it is, Bitcoin was created. So nobody, it was a created kind of currency that has gained popularity slowly. People got excited for a while, but then it went, you know, back and forth. And there's been, is it real? Is it not real? Please take Bitcoin. It's essentially a internet currency with zero regulation. There is no monetary value outside. With us moving basically to online only for most of our purchases, a good portion of us in this country, understand that this thing is growing at a rapid pace. And this isn't like the dollar or the euro. It is Bitcoin. And the dollar or euro has a value both in the internet and outside of the world. This has only a value inside of the interwebs of the world, and a value that is growing each and every single day. And there are plenty of companies that
use it. And no one uses it? Companies like Overstock use it. Virgin takes it. The Sacramento Kings takes it. Fortune takes it. Do you know that?
I mean, that's technically true. Yeah, you can buy Fortune magazine using Bitcoin. But I'm just saying, in general, I can't go walk across the street to the retail shop, the brick and mortar shop, and use Bitcoin. It's not that mainstream.
It's not that mainstream now. But it's going to be. This is what's next in the world of technology. We're moving away from a currency-based society to everything is going to be online. There is going to be no more dollar bills. There's going to be no more change. There's going to be none of that stuff. It is going to be a currency-based society. And this is the kind of thing that eventually I think will take over. And the minute Amazon steps in and says, hey, we're going to start taking Bitcoin, or we're going to allow the people that, you know, to take Bitcoin. And eBay is going to do the same thing. When they're going to allow individuals and groups to take Bitcoin, you watch what happens. This thing could potentially be huge.
You're missing the bigger point. What we have here is a new asset class, mm-hmm. place to store your value. It's like gold. There's hedge funds buying Bitcoin now.
Yeah, but I'm going to really belabor this metaphor here. It's not like I can go across the street and pay for my hot dog with a gold ingot either.
You can't pay for it in gold either, right?
Yeah, sure, you can invest it, but my point is this is not a major asset class. Yes, it exists, but this is absolutely a bubble, and it's going to deflate.
I don't think it's going to deflate anytime soon. Will there be... like everything else, there'll be learning curves, there'll be some volatility, there'll be some ups and downs. There's not trillions and trillions of Bitcoins. I traded currency for a long time. The currency market is so massive, you have no idea. You think the volume on the New York Stock Exchange is big? The currency market in 1 hour does what the New York Stock Exchange does in a month. That's how big the currency exchange is. Bitcoin's nowhere near either of those, but it's going to be. It is. People shying away from stuff like this are foolish to think that these things don't matter and that they're not going to be something. Just like those people who thought, well, newspapers will be here forever. Stay off my lawn. Your music's too loud. No. Things change. This is the early gold rush. You could say, hey, you know what? I heard from a guy that was just talking head, radio kind of guy, talked about politics, pop culture. I think he even did a crazy Elmo bit and talked about Mickey Mouse once in a while because he thought it was funny. And he talked about Bitcoins. It's real. It is. And the more that bigger companies start to gravitate towards this and take it, the more legitimacy it's going to have, the bigger it's going to get. And it is something that you need to pay attention to. Will it do away with cash immediately? No, that's going to take time. But we're becoming a cashless society anyways. This is another way that we're going to become a cashless society. There's not going to be exchange rates. There's going to be Bitcoins. And that's something to pay attention to. 844-DIG-CHAT, 844-344-2423, chat at chatbensonshow.com. You text the program, 323-538-2423. Frank Frutti is going to join us next. He is a sociologist, he's a professor emeritus from, was it Kent? I think it's emeritus from Kent University over there in England. But he's got a great book out. And here's a guy who was a bit progressive in his day and then some, but is worried about where the world is going when it comes to students. And it's not all their fault. Parents, you need to pay attention to this. You need to pay attention to this. Your kids may be whiny in college, bitchy and moany, because you've allowed them to be that way. And by the time they get there, it may already be too late to turn them around. He's going to join us straight ahead. This here be... The Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thoughts and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
What I'm really concerned about is the fact that within universities, a very illiberal ethos has become institutionalized, where for the first time, a growing number of young people actually think that freedom is not a big deal.
That right there is Frank Ferretti. He is a sociologist, professor emeritus at Kent University. He's got a book out, What's Happening to the University? A sociological exploration of its infantilization, his whininess, if you will, of what's going on at university. He joins us all the way over from jolly old England. Thanks so much for taking time with us today, Frank.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So kids don't seem to care anymore on universities about things like free speech, and that's not a good thing, Frank.
No, I mean, there's a really big problem because there used to be a time when kids would come on campus, they would experiment, take risks, make things happen. They would regard freedom as their own right, something that they cherished and loved. Whereas now freedom is seen as an inconvenience. And very often, you know, young students will say, you know, your right to free speech is offensive to me. you know, words hurt me, and therefore I don't want to hear you say these things. And it's far better to censor people than to argue things out. And when you have that kind of atmosphere built on campus, then you do have a really big problem on your hand.
You know what's interesting? Some of your stuff, and I've seen some of the interviews and stuff you've given to people out there. One of the things that's interesting is, kids get to college, and really at that time, isn't it almost in a way too late, because it's the parenting along the way that has fed into this, and by the time they get to college, they kind of have this attitude that is going to be really hard to turn around because it's so established inside of them.
No, you're right. One of the worrying trends in American and other societies is that adults and parents in particular, but also teachers and schools, find it very difficult to transmit values to young kids, to socialize them. And instead of challenging young people in the way they should, we kind of seek to validate them, and we use psychology as a way of making children feel good to avoid having to deal with the difficult problems. And one of the things that I worry about is when kids come home from school, and it doesn't really matter how they've done in the class, you know, they come home with 100 smiley faces, and they are told that they're, you know, Einsteins and geniuses, and they very rarely get questioned and criticized. So what happened is that, you know, as young kids grow up, they've never been exposed to any real challenge or criticism. They lose the capacity to deal with failure or problems, and therefore their resilience to some extent becomes diminished. And it's not their fault. You know, we're responsible for creating that situation.
Talking to Frank Ferretti. He's got a book out called What Happens to University, A Sociological Exploration of Its Infantilization. And Frank, here's something that is, you know, you talk about that with kids and stuff, but these kids are now coming to universities, and like you said, they've been praised their whole life. They've never really faced any obstacles. They've never really had any challenges thrown their way, which I think shapes us as adults. They get there to colleges, though, and these professors and these deans don't seem to want to throw any challenges. They instead back down, which I find to be completely disheartening.
Yes, I mean, that is very disappointing. That, you know, I often talk to my colleagues and some administrators, and they basically become complicit in creating an environment where, for example, they allow, you know, young people to kind of get away with whatever they think, you know, sort of makes them feel good. And there's a kind of atmosphere on campuses where, you know, sort of criticisms and questioning and putting pressure on students is seen as being somehow a horrible act that you mustn't do. And very recently I was talking to a colleague who couldn't believe that when I hold a seminar, you know, when I run a seminar, I really give my students a hard time, because, you know, my role as a professor is to stretch them, to challenge them, to give them the capacity to stand on their 2 feet and become independent. And he looked at me in the eyes and he said, "You know, Frank, I think you're just an academic bully." You know, and the very fact that he couldn't understand the role of intellectual pressure on young undergraduates showed me just how far things have gone.
But is that the whole point, though, with your students? You want to challenge them? Because what I think we do as adults and as parents is we don't prepare children for the real world. And we're not there to fight their bullies at work and in the real world. And that, to me, is a disservice to the children.
Well, yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's not that the parents, you know, sort of want to sort of become complicit in not really challenging their children and giving their kids a free pass. It's just that, you know, the culture that we live in is one where, you know, parents that take a hard line are often criticized for being insensitive. In some situations, I've heard parents being criticized for what's called emotional bullying. So when I ask, what do you mean by emotional bullying? You know, all they mean is that, you know, the parents simply, you know, sort of kind of force their children to come back home at a certain time, and when they didn't come back home at a certain time, and punish them. That is not described as emotional bullying. So when there's so much pressure on parents to roll over and not to discipline their young kids, not to give them clear guidelines and directions, then it's not particularly surprising that we have this particular outcome.
Talking to Frank Ferretti. He's got a book out called What Happened to the University? A Sociological Exploration of Its Infantilization. And, Frank, here's something that's very interesting. I heard you talk about this, and this is the stuff that's insane. You had a friend who gave a speech about the Holocaust, and people complained because they didn't like the pictures about the Holocaust.
Yes, I mean, this was a really amazing experience because my friend was visiting a university in Florida, which will remain nameless, and he came over from East Europe. He's one of the leading Holocaust scholars there, and he thought, well, you know, if I'm going to give a lecture on the Holocaust, I want to show a picture, you know, of what happened to the people that gone through this horrible event. And so one student protested and said, you know, stop doing this. You know, I'm being offended. I'm being traumatized. That's not why I came here. And my friend just looked at her and said, look, you know, this is a lecture on the Holocaust. This is not a lecture on a fairy tale or on something, you know, innocuous. You know, the reason why you're here is to grasp what's really going on. And what happened next was even worse because next day, my friend got called in by the dean of the faculty, and the dean basically explained to him that in this university, you know, we don't do this. We don't, you know, we kind of respect students' boundaries and their safe spaces. And if a student protests about an offensive image, then your job is to fall in line. And, you know, my friend just couldn't understand how you could ever teach a course on the Holocaust if these were the guidelines.
You know, it's crazy because, you know, you're talking again about the Holocaust. We have it here where these kids are bullying people to change and to get rid of names of colleges and people that used to be, you know, whose busts were on the wall or pictures were on the wall, and they want to change history. And we can't do that. History is who we were. It's not where we're going. And don't you find that terrifying that these kids are able to get away with that? And it's weird how we're wanting to whitewash stuff from the past.
Well, it is, and I think what I find particularly worrying is that, you know, we seem to be very good at trying to solve the problems of the past, and all of our energies goes on fixing what happened 200 years ago and 300 years ago, which is obviously a bit of an illusion because, you know, what has happened is happened. You can't really change that. But at the same time, our energies and our attention is completely diverted from the problems that confront us in the here and now. And I think that, you know, the very fact that we are so imprisoned in what has happened a long time ago and have all these kind of arguments about, you know, what statues to pull down and what painting we should take off the walls indicates that we do live in a world that is very disoriented and morally confused.
Why are kids not interested in freedom?
Well, I don't think it's really their fault. I think that what has happened is that, you know, sort of adult culture, Western culture, has over the recent decades treated freedom as a kind of value that we just simply take for granted. It's become emptied of content. People don't really live freely, you know, through their lives. They don't actually, you know, sort of celebrate freedom in their everyday experience. And what has happened is that, you know, young people regard freedom as an inconvenience, as something that puts them under pressure. Freedom creates uncertainty for them, and the last thing you want in today's culture is uncertainty. Uncertainty is no longer seen as an opportunity, but something that's almost like a cultural crime. And I think in these circumstances, what has happened is that, you know, we fear freedom. I think that's really, it's really as simple as that. You know, a lot of young people and a lot of adults fear freedom and would rather have, you know, a very secure, risk-free environment where everything is safe and everything is predictable.
Moving forward, where do you see this going? Is this going to get worse? Is parenting going to change along the way? Are we going to have a snap back to some normalcy? Or is this the world we're going to live in where feelings will override facts and history because that's more important than the truth?
I think we're in a beginning process. I know a lot of parents who have, you know, children who are 4, 5, 6, you know, as, you know, 11, 12. And what they all tell me to a person is that they're, you know, they are having to, you know, sort of give way to this, these kinds of pressures that we're discussing. A lot of good parents who do want to encourage the independence of their children are often denounced as being irresponsible. There's a lot of pressure on parents to conform, and I predict that this is going to get far worse in the medium term, that because there is very little kickback against it. And I think, you know, until people like ourselves begin to stand up and be counted and convince other adults that what's really at issue is the future of our society, and that it's not just one child or a group of kids on a campus, but, you know, but the whole of society, and that we need to take a stand until we kind of take some political measures to change the way we educate kids in schools. We're in for this horrible cultural climate for the long haul.
His name is Frank Ferretti. His books, What Happened to the University, A Sociological Exploration of Its Infantilization. He is a professor emeritus at Kent. He is a sociologist. The guy, he's got a lot going on. Get the book. It's on Amazon. Tell you what, man, it's very interesting and in some ways kind of frightening to see kind of where we're going. And I have a 7-year-old, and I was discussing this today about giving him freedoms, Frank, and letting him kind of get away from, you know, always at mom and dad's, you know, apron strings, if you will. And it can be crazy out there, but I think it's the best thing for all. We appreciate you coming on today all the way from Joliet, England.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. It's crazy. It is. And I was having this discussion today with Jack's mom, my son's mom, because she's being a little needy. He's with me last week. He's with her this week. And I'm like, you know, and he's got a little anxiety. I'm like, you know what? You got to push him. You've got to allow kids to overcome some of these things. And I don't think we're doing it enough. And it is funny the way that, again, these kids get there to college and it's too late. It's done. It's been sold. They've already bought into it. They think they're all of that. And then we go, well, these kids have, you know, this kind of crazy world that they live in. They feel so entitled. We've allowed them to be entitled. You've told them they're entitled. It's nuts. 844-DIG-CHAT, 844-344-2423, chat@chadbensonshow.com. Again, what happened to the university, a sociological exploration of its infantilization. Check it out. Grab it on Amazon and where good books are available. It's the Chad Benson Show.
You call it ridiculous. We call it reality with a twist. Say what?
Say what? All right, I'm going to tell you this right now. When you go to some of these countries, even a country like China that is very much a first world society now with its financial behemoth that it becomes, there are still some things that you don't have the same fuzzy feeling when you do certain things, i.e. travel. Yesterday, a woman grounded an airplane for about 5 hours. The reason for that, her name was Kui. Aw, Kui, what'd you do? She's 80 years old, and she's getting ready to take a flight. And can I just say, too, China is notorious for flight delays. You go there, expect to be on the ground for several hours. It's just a suggestion and when they take off. We get mad at our people here, because you're on the ground sometimes for 45 minutes or you taxi and sometimes it can be long. This is a daily occurrence at these airports. But the Okui there, 80-year-old, you know, grandmother, she thought, hey, we need a little good luck because we're not quite sure if this A-bus 320 is going to be able to make it to where we need to go. So I'm going to take some coins I've got. And as I get ready to go up the little ramp here, you know, from the tarmac to the airplane, I'm going to toss these coins in the engine because that's solid. People reported immediately. Kui was eventually taken into custody, because that's also what you do to an 80-year-old grandma. It is China, so she's going to have 50 years of hard labor. They found several coins on the ground, but they did found a few that got into the engine, hence the reason it took 5 hours for the delay. Let's just put it this way. It's scary to think that a small coin could do damage enough to bring down an airplane, but better safe than sorry. Sorry, Kui. By the way, she has no criminal record until now, and she has no history of mental illness. If you didn't see it, I advise you to Google it. It is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. A man in Reading, England. Reading, by the way, a very cool little city. I used to do a little football in Reading at time or two, actually. Made my debut there in reserve game for Wickham in Reading. Man walking across the street in Reading, going to a pub. And as he's crossing the streets, getting onto the other side of the sidewalk, everything looks okay. Remember, in England, there's closed-circuit televisions everywhere. Around the corner comes a giant bus. What does this bus do? This bus smashes into the man, sending him flying. And it hits, it's crazy. First of all, if you watch it, I have no idea why the bus was going that fast. The 50-year-old Simon Smith, who was hit, gets tossed about 20 feet or so. Bunch of stuff gets busted up. Simon, though, actually stands up, brushes himself off, and heads straight into the pub, the Purple Turtle, to start drinking. He has no injuries whatsoever. And it's amazing. This is the funny thing, though. So people call the police. They call the paramedics. They show up. Everybody thinks he's full of crap, except for a few people that have seen it. And they finally pull the CCTV, which is the closed-circuit television. They think, sweet mother of God, what is up for that? And he's okay. He's cool. It's cool. We were trying to figure out how many times that video has probably been seen. And if you've not seen it, just put man gets hit by bus. It is everywhere. I have seen it where it's got 15 million views and 8 million views and 150,000 views and 300. It's had to have been seen by at least 50 million people. But if you have a chance, go check it out. It is a crazy thing. 844-DIG-CHAT. That there be the number if you'd like to, you know, chat with us. You feel free to do that. You can also text us like that as well. That's very modern. You want to send some bitcoins along the way. 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. Check out ChadBensonShow.com. Grab your podcast there as well. This be the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show.